Hello, I'm Steve Braunham with the Missing People Podcast. In this program, my co-host, Kelly Jokowski, founder and president of Project Jason, talked with Vicki Kelly, mother of Tommy Kelly, who went missing on January 26, 1999, at the tender age of 17. Over a year and a half later, some partial skeletal remains were located and presumed to be Tommy's remains. Although no conclusive proof was known to be found, Tommy Kelly is presumed to be dead. Thereafter, Vicki founded the Tommy Foundation to pursue the rights of the missing and their families. They work for ever better legislation for the missing and personally work with the families of the missing. Also, they participate in a number of training programs covering law enforcement, the general public, and the families of the missing. Let's join Kelly and Vicki in their conversation.
Thank you, Vicki, for joining us tonight on the Missing People Podcast. We have Vicki Kelly from the Tommy Foundation from Oregon with us. And welcome to the show, Vicki.
Well, Kelly, it's wonderful to be able to do this. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Let's start out by talking about what the Tommy Foundation is. What does the Tommy Foundation do? What is your mission statement?
Well, we believe that one child missing is one too many. And we founded the Tommy Foundation in 2001. After we recovered our son, we became involved with legislation here in Oregon. And what basically the foundation does is bring the issue of missing children to the public's awareness through the media and public presentations, community and law enforcement victim impact presentations, advocating for policy and programs that address the issue of missing persons, empowering parents with information on what to do if their child is missing, and child safety and a digital photo fingerprint child ID program.
Now, do you just service citizens in Oregon, or do you service anyone anywhere in the country?
Well, mainly Oregon, because I do receive not only from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children referrals for Oregon, but I also get media contact and law enforcement will call me. So usually it is Oregon, but I do support families and other regions of the country.
Now, if I'm a family of a missing person in Oregon and I call you, what then do you do for me? What happens in that phone call?
Immediately try to empower you with what you can be doing. Of course, find out the child's, the missing person's story. But then I will also, immediately provide resources that will fill the needs of the searching family, such as at the Tommy Foundation website, families can immediately make up a missing child flyer or a missing person flyer, even a missing pet flyer, and give suggestions on where to pass those out, et cetera. And we also will assist in passing out flyers in our area, posting them locally. And then I will give them resources, that might be able to help them if they needed a search and rescue. I could recommend the Laura Recovery Center, who comes in and helps communities organize the volunteers for a search and rescue. Because when there's a missing person, the community is going to turn out and want to help. And law enforcement can use the help if it's done properly. I will give them the information if they don't already have it on either the Nation Center for Missing Adults or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And just try to empower them, because when your child or loved one is missing, there's no more helpless of a feeling. You call law enforcement, and then you go, what do I do now? So that's what we do, is to provide that support, immediate support and suggestions, and then we hold the hands, for as long as they need our services.
Excellent. You mentioned Tommy, and of course, your organization, nonprofit, is the Tommy Foundation. And I know it's difficult, Vicki, but could you go ahead and share the story of Tommy with us?
In 1999, January 26th is that date in our lives that forever changed, our lives. My 17-year-old son Tommy disappeared here in Oregon. We now know in hindsight, through information through the years that we gathered, that he was involved with methamphetamine. He made poor choices, but so are a lot of other of our children in this country, and adults as well. And he was seen probably about an hour after the last time I saw him, a mile and a half from our home, We live in the rural hills of the Rogue Valley in Oregon. And he ran to four people begging for help. They say that he looked like he had a broken nose. His forehead was gashed open. He was drenched in mud and blood, and he was begging for help, saying, "They're after me." He didn't stay. He would run to somebody. He did pound on the window of one home, and he just kept on running. And he didn't come home that night. And it wasn't unusual. He was 17 years old. We do live up in the hills of Oregon. He could have been staying at his sister's, who didn't have a phone at that time. And she didn't have a car at that time, you know, to give him a ride home. And so it wasn't unusual for him to stay at a friend's or down in town at his sister's. And the next day he didn't show up for work. And that was the first red flag that something was not right. And so that's when we began our search, contacting all of his friends, work, et cetera. Tommy, the last time I saw him, I did not know it because I had not gone into his bedroom until the next day. I left his pager, his paycheck, his car keys, his truck. I thought maybe he'd, you know, the truck wasn't working and he had walked down into town. Well, as it turned out, you know, that sent up more red flags. We then found out that Tommy had become involved with an adult male who we knew to be a methamphetamine user. And we questioned him, and he denied knowing about anything that had happened to Tommy. In fact, he was the last person seen with Tommy before Tommy was seen running and begging for help. He was brought in for questioning, and we found out that he had been injecting Tommy all the night before with methamphetamine. He did the actual injecting. And while Tommy made poor choices, this was an adult male injecting a controlled substance into my son. And who knows what they, you know, put into methamphetamine. They use a lot of cuts that are toxic. So law enforcement took a report over the phone. They didn't come to the home. And the more information that we gathered, the more heightened our fear was growing. And we finally got it to the news on TV. And that's when the four people that had seen him injured called law enforcement and say, "Hey, this boy, on the date you're saying he was last seen, was at our home at such and such a time," which was only an hour after we had last seen him. Law enforcement never responded to their calls, by the way, of a boy being injured begging for help. They didn't put two and two together when we called law enforcement to report Tommy missing. And it took another 5 days for law enforcement to even assign a detective to the case after all these people called law enforcement and the news station to say, "Hey, we saw this kid. This is what was the circumstances." And they automatically assumed that Tommy was a runaway. And I'm going, what kid's going to leave his paycheck, leave the keys to his car, have a job, you know, have no reason to be running except something looks like it's foul play because of this methamphetamine? Well, a girl that Tommy was seeing was brought in for questioning. We knew that she had involvement with Tommy. He had known her since elementary school. The month before Tommy's disappearance, my daughter and son were down at 7-Eleven getting batteries for toys on Christmas Eve, and she ran to Tommy saying, "Tommy, you got to help me. I got into the product, and they're after me." We found out that he had picked up her drug debt to pay it off for her and hadn't gotten it paid off in time, I guess. That's one of the scenarios of what happened to Tommy, is that the mafia or the Mexican mafia has been associated with his crime here in Oregon, was to rough him up, and they drove on our property. Tommy saw them and got beat up, got away, and ran, and then they caught up with him later. But anyway, they treated the case like a runaway, and we were left, you know, with our own devices. We were getting information that Tommy had been murdered and thrown into what's called Chinaman Wells here. They were gold mining places that the Chinamen in the community used to do in the 1800s. So we got VCR camera donated to us and a light and ropes and got a BLM map and started looking in every well. We rode horses around the mountains, you know, where he was last seen. At the time, we were also being told by law enforcement that because it was cold, they couldn't bring out search and rescue dogs. And then it rained, and search and rescue dogs couldn't search in the rain. And then we had snow, and search and rescue dogs couldn't do it in the snow. It was 3.5 weeks after we knew that he was last been injured and begging for his life before we got search and rescue out there. And by then, most of the scent probably had been washed away. So it was 1.5 years of searching and following every lead. We staked out houses when rumor of a boy appearing to look like Tommy was seen in neighborhoods somewhere here in the valley and was staying in a shed, you know, in the back of this property. And so we would stake out the shed and wait for the, and it was a homeless kid. And he was 18 years old. He did resemble Tommy. But that's what our life was like for 1.5 years until my daughter heard on the radio that a skull had been found 2 miles from our home. And law enforcement hadn't called to let us know. They had found it the day before. And the media got a hold of the story, and they encamped at our house. And it took 3 days, and we got a phone call that, yes, it had been positively identified by the forensic odontologist to be our son. And that because he was located in an orchard with 20-foot by 30-foot blackberry bushes, that we had the skull. That should be enough, and that we were just going to have to take their word for it, that it was our son. I went on TV, outraged, begging for help from the community to help us recover Tommy. I drive by that spot every day, and the community responded, and so law enforcement had to be there, and they cut back all the blackberry bushes and recovered 25 more of Tommy's remains, and that's what we buried, a skull and 25 bones. We asked for a meeting with the coroner to show us how they came to the conclusion that it was our son. There were only 4 molars left in the upper jaw. And we were told that the coroner was too busy of a man to give us 15 minutes time to answer our silly questions. So my husband to this day has not fully accepted that the remains that we laid out in the coffin were our son. And that's why, you know, I am very involved with this missing persons legislation to right a lot of the wrongs that happened in Tommy's case.
I'm so sorry about that, Vicki. What a story. I remember when you and I met in Team Hope training, when I was being trained and you were present in the classroom, and we went around the room and each person had to share their story. And there was a couple stories that really stuck out, and I never ever forgot them, and one of them was yours, because it was just so gut-wrenching that anyone should have to go through something like that. You know,
it didn't end there. You know, it didn't end there. At the time, the man that admitted to injecting Tommy with methamphetamine all night, until we found Tommy or found a body, no charges could be brought against him. And we lived here in this community, and we're a small rural community. With him for 1.5 years, he was arrested when Tommy's body was found. But because, you know, quite honestly, Kelly, we don't know if it was a methamphetamine overdose from him being injected, that he ran into the, you know, blackberry bushes, which even law enforcement, I have them on tape saying is inconceivable. There's other information. It was over that drug debt that he picked up for that girl. But regardless, you know, we had to go through his trial, and we couldn't prove a murder. It wasn't enough to, you know, to prove a murder one way or the other. He was charged with, you know, delivery of a controlled substance to a minor. It was a Class C misdemeanor, 90-day sentence.
And that was it?
And that was it. Well, probation, you know, but I was outraged, so one of the Tommy laws was increasing. Injecting a minor with a controlled substance by an adult is now a Class A felony and 10-year sentence. And it's already been, you know, used here in Oregon for a mother that injected her 15-year-old retarded daughter with methamphetamine, and she almost overdosed. And mother is now serving 10 years in prison.
And that was one of my questions for you is, I'd like the listeners to hear, what are the Tommy laws? Because you did pass a set of laws in relation to what happened with your son.
Well, even though it's been federal law for a lot of years that a missing child is supposed to be immediately listed into the NCIC computer database, they waited 2.5 weeks, we found out, to list Tommy. And I don't know if it would have changed things, but they didn't follow the law. So one of the Tommy laws is immediate listing of a missing child on the NCIC database. There is no waiting period. We were told, give it 48 hours, give it 72 hours. It'll probably show back up. So we made it a state law. And also it allows for the training of law enforcement on how to respond to missing children. When Tommy was missing, the reporting agency didn't even have a policy on how to respond to a missing child. So now every chief executive law enforcement officer in Oregon, here in Jackson and Josephine and Klamath counties have taken the training at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and come back and implemented policy. So the training of law enforcement is one of the main focuses of the Tommy Foundation, because if they don't know what to do, how are they supposed to do it?
Exactly. Was it difficult for you to get that passed and just in a technical way?
It was easy. Because it was at a time where the issue of missing children was really beginning to get, you know, national and media awareness. Poly Class, of course, it happened in the 90s, the big cases and stuff, you know, were getting national attention, but all of a sudden it was like the media finally became aware, hey, there's a lot of kids missing. And so it was wonderful. We passed it unanimously on May 25th, which is national and now Oregon Missing Children's Day, and had a governor signing, and felt very, very accomplished. You know, we had righted some of the wrongs that occurred in my son's case, and not just for Tommy, but, you know, we wanted to be a voice for the missing, and this was for all missing.
So you mentioned that it was pretty easy to pass the Tommy laws, and you were speaking more in a technical sense of passing a law, but what about in the emotional sense? Has doing this work and doing these things in your son's name, how has that helped you to heal from this very, very tragic situation?
Well, like I said, when your child is missing, you feel so helpless. You know, hanging on to hope is so hard. You know, sometimes it's just a thin little thread. This gave me the hope that we can make a difference, that change can be made. It was a sense of empowerment, and I did it for Tommy. You know, this was something, burying a child, that should not happen. Bringing a child home bone by bone should not happen. And this was a way of me perpetuating his life, turning something that was so tragic and so unnecessary into something positive, and hopefully help save other kids' lives.
Very good. Well, that's a wonderful testament of a mother's love, and I thank you on behalf of everyone in Oregon who can't necessarily speak to you directly for doing that.
Well, one child missing is one too many, and, you know, I know that pain and that hysteria and the not knowing what to do. Now that policies and laws are in place, hopefully next time, you know, the other parent will be more empowered and law enforcement will have the tools to do what they need to do in order to bring back a missing person home safely.
Have you seen some positive results in Oregon that because those laws were passed, that there were some missing person or missing child cases who were resolved because of that?
Well, one of the trainings here in Southern Oregon, three counties have come together through training that is now offered free to law enforcement and formed a child abduction response team. And the other day, we had a missing child in the area that they did not automatically assume that he was a runaway. And they responded in the correct, you know, process of evaluation, and they were getting ready to implement and deploy the CART team. As it turned out, the child was found. He was out of his zone of safety. But before, you know, he was a 12-year-old kid, they would have listed him as a runaway. He was found up in the mountains here in Oregon, and we had bear and bobcat. They immediately had the helicopters out looking and spotted him, so he was safely recovered. So before, they would have, you know, just listed it as a runaway. or told the parents, give it a day, he'll be back. And I'm sorry to say that at the age of 12, that does happen. So they know what to do now, and they're doing it. And so, yeah, I've seen positive change. There's a program called the A Child is Missing program, and it's free to law enforcement. And when there's a missing child in any category, a college student, senior with dementia, mentally or physically handicapped, challenged person, missing, they put out 1,000 phone calls a minute to the area to notify the community that there is a missing person in their area with, you know, description. And we had a 4-year-old little boy, autistic boy, who was missing. Because of the A Child is Missing program, he was basically recovered. So they're taking advantage, law enforcement is taking advantage of the trainings that are out there and coming back and using them. So I've been delighted in seeing the changes over the last 8 years that have occurred here.
Well, that's great. That is really wonderful.
This concludes the first part of Kelly's conversation with Vicki. You're listening to the Missing People Podcast, copyright 2007, all rights reserved and held jointly by Missing People Podcast and Project Jason. Original music created and performed by Ariana Kima. For more information on Project Jason, please go to projectjason.org. To learn more about the Tommy Foundation, please go to the website at tommyfoundation.org. From my co-host, Kelly Jolkowski, I'm Steve Bronham with the Missing People Podcast. Thanks for listening.